You might think we'd figured out a few things about raising kids by now. After all, we as a species have been doing it for thousands upon thousands of years. But as the world changes, so do approaches to parenting. And as child psychologist Ross Green outlines his approach in a new book called Raising Human Beings, Creating a Collaborative Partnership with Your Child. Ross Green, as I mentioned, is a child psychologist, a former faculty member at Harvard Medical School, and an author several times over. He is also the founding director of the nonprofit Lives in the Balance. And yes, he has two kids, now in their teens. Ross Green, welcome to The Exchange.
Thanks for having me on.
So your model, Collaborative and Proactive Solutions, which you abbreviate as CPS, was there a lot of trial and error leading up to it?
Well, it's not a new model in terms of people using it. It was also the model that was described in my book, The Explosive Child, which came out in 1998, and Lost at School, which came out in 2008. And so the key here is that we've been applying it to kids with behavioral challenges for a very long time. Raising human beings is our first stab at saying, why would we only want to save the good stuff for behaviorally challenging kids? Don't all kids need this stuff?
Is that what the way the approach tends to be these days, with the best massaging? It tends to take place with the kids who are creating difficulties?
I don't know. I've always said that behaviorally challenging kids teach us quite a bit about all kids. I still feel that way. You know, the main difference between a behaviorally challenging kid and a kid who we might, using finger quotes again here, call a regular old kid, is that the behaviorally challenging kids are expressing the fact that they're having difficulty meeting certain expectations in ways that are more extreme. But every kid has difficulty meeting some expectations. It's just that the behaviorally challenging ones are the ones who are screaming and swearing and kicking and hitting and spitting. And regular old kids tend not to do that stuff, or at least not very often.
I think a lot of parents can certainly relate to certainly much of what you're talking about. The collaboration part, though, I'm thinking might trouble certainly some authoritarian parents. I mean, and would question how you maintain clear roles still.
Well, clear roles, I guess it depends on what you feel your role is as a parent. And that's why one of the early chapters in the book is called Role Confusion. You know, there are downsides to a purely authoritarian approach to things. I think it's easier to be purely authoritarian. Life is clearer that way. But that doesn't mean it's actually best for raising a future human being or a little human being. And that's a lot of what I talk about in the book, is that a lot of the authoritarian parenting is around power and imposition of adult will, and unilateral solutions to expectations kids are having difficulty meeting. And one of the questions I'm asking in the book is that really the best way to go? And is it really fostering in our kids the characteristics on the more positive side of human nature? And my answer is no.
And the answer you offer is, to use your words, collaborative, non-punitive, and non-adversarial. I mean, there's going to be some adversity in a relationship between parents and kids, isn't it?
You know, I think that the adversity comes in when kids are having difficulty meeting parental expectations. Sometimes it's because the parental expectations are too high, and sometimes it's just that the kid is just not good with whatever the expectation is. That's when the rubber meets the road. Do we plunge forward as parents and simply make the kid do what we want him to do and be who we want him to be? Or is there room for us to take into account who the kid is, his preferences, his beliefs, his skills, his point of view, his voice, so that we are collaborating on outcomes rather than forcing outcomes? And while that can be a little scary for parents who were thinking that they were in absolute control of their kid's outcome, no parent is in absolute control of their kid's outcome. So I'm not saying anything that isn't already true, but I'm just saying it a little bit more bluntly than a lot of people do.
So you say it's not control we should seek as parents. What is your preferred term?
Influence. I find that people who are shooting for control don't have control. The harder they shoot for it, the less they have. When we're shooting for control, we're frequently not listening to what the kid is telling us. The number one complaint I get from kids is that the caregivers in their lives don't listen. And the number one complaint I get from their caregivers is that the kids won't talk to us. There's definitely a disconnect there. What we're shooting for is influence, and influence is the most we can shoot for in the first place, because we don't have control. This kid, as I say in the book, was somebody the minute he popped into this world, and if we're paying close attention, he's letting us know who that somebody is pretty early on.
It's an interesting disconnect you just mentioned, though. The kids say the parents aren't listening, and the parents say the kids don't talk. I mean, does that take place within individual conversations? I mean, are they finding the same thing out of the same conversation?
Well, they certainly take place within specific conversations. It might go something like this. I want to go to my friend's house tonight. You're not going to your friend's house tonight. Why can't I go to my friend's house tonight? Because I said so. You're not listening to me. And over time, the kid eventually says to him or herself, why talk? If this is what's going to be what I get for talking, why talk? The talking that adults and kids are doing when they are trying to solve problems collaboratively is they're actually trying to hear each other's concerns. Each other's perspective, each other's point of view. They're not going to solutions until they know what each other's concerns are, so they know what concerns they're trying to get addressed. So often, adults and kids get into power struggles, and a power struggle is where we have competing solutions, and we're trying to see whose solution is going to win. And the person whose solution is going to win in a power struggle is whoever has the power. So the whole currency becomes about power. And what we're looking to do instead is shift that currency to collaboration. Believe it or not, it's not that hard to take a kid's concerns into account and to hear them. And when we do that, kids learn how to take adult concerns into account and how to hear them. And together, they learn how to come up with solutions that address the concerns of both parties.
All right. We'll hear much more from the child psychologist, Ross Green, as we talk about his book, Raising Human Beings, Creating a Collaborative Partnership with Your Child. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Ross Green and you in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the child psychologist Ross Green. He's written a book called Raising Human Beings, Creating a Collaborative Partnership with Your Child. It's to find a space between what he calls the dictatorial kingdom and the pushover provinces and actually joining with your child, a partnership, a collaboration to help smooth things along in the home and in growth. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So give a parent an opening sense of what it's like to collaborate with a child. Based on what you've said already, I gather you really need to listen just for intake and don't leap to trying to provide solutions on the spot.
Well, the first thing we need to do is get parents out of the heat of the moment. So much of conflict between kids and caregivers occurs in the heat of the moment, and it doesn't have to be in the heat of the moment because the expectations a kid is having difficulty meeting are predictable. And many parents find that hard to believe, but it actually happens to be true. So the first thing we do is we help parents make a list of all of the expectations a child is having difficulty reliably meeting. Any item, any expectation that ends up on that list is predictable, or it couldn't have ended up on the list in the first place. Then we help parents prioritize which unmet expectations, in the CPS model we call them unsolved problems, which unmet expectations or unsolved problems do you want to start working on first? And then that makes the entire enterprise proactive. We want to get parents and kids out of the heat of the moment where they are angry and where they're in a rush and where they're often saying things that are hurtful and where that they don't actually even mean what they're saying. And then solving a problem collaboratively basically consists of three steps. And it's almost hard to believe that it can be this simple. Each step is a little hard until people get used to them, but the first step is called the empathy step. And that's where the adult is gathering information from the kid about the kid's concern, perspective, point of view on a given unsolved problem, an expectation the child is having difficulty meeting. We want to know why the kid's having difficulty sleeping in his own bed. We want to know what's hard about the science homework. We want to know what's hard about getting ready for school in the morning. We want to know what's hard about putting the iPhone away when it's time to go to sleep at night. We want to get the kid's concern or perspective. If we don't, we're not going to be able to get that concern or perspective addressed. Second step is called the define adult concern step. That's where the adult is entering his or her concern into perspective. The very same concern the adult might have tried to previously get addressed through being unilateral and through imposing a solution, the adult is now getting addressed collaboratively. This gives adults practice at figuring out what their concerns are. It's very interesting. Frequently, we ask adults what their concerns are about a given unsolved problem, and the adult has no idea because they've already moved on to their solution, which they're very busy imposing. So one of the things about this process is it does help adults really give thought, what am I expecting from this kid? Now the adult's going to get that problem solved collaboratively instead. Kids, by the way, get lots of practice in the empathy step at figuring out what their concerns are, articulating them. Parents get lots of practice at hearing kids' concerns. Then in the invitation, kid and adult are collaborating on a solution, but one that addresses the concerns of both parties. And this is where kids and adults learn all kinds of important skills like empathy and taking another person's perspective and resolving disagreements in ways that do not involve conflict. These are actually the skills that help humans display the better side of human nature, and they're being taught by solving problems collaboratively.
Ross Green is our guest. His book is called Raising Human Beings, Creating a Collaborative Partnership with Your Child. So you counsel parents, I notice, not to think of this three-step process as negotiation. Why not?
Negotiation has a resonance to it that a lot of parents don't love. I also don't call it compromising, even though there could be some element of negotiating and compromising in the process. What we really want parents thinking about is that this is problem solving. And interestingly enough, I don't come across many parents who aren't interested in solving problems with their kid, especially if those problems are causing conflict and causing acrimony. No downside in solving problems. And that actually is a more accurate depiction of what parents and kids are doing together. They're solving problems collaboratively. There's enough parents out there who won't compromise and who won't negotiate that there's really no reason to get them stuck on semantics. This is problem solving, pure and simple.
Let's take a call. We have, just as I reached for it, she went away. Okay, no call there. But you're welcome to join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. What happens in this second step of the process, the define adult concerns process, when the child and an adult realize the concerns differ quite a bit?
Well, the interesting thing is they're likely to differ quite a bit because the kid's concern is often about why he or she is having difficulty meeting the expectation. The adult's concern is what's troubling them about the kid not meeting the expectation, how that unsolved problem is affecting the kid, how that unsolved problem is affecting other people. And so it's pretty much guaranteed that they will have different concerns. That's par for the course. And that's actually not a bad thing. What they have to do in that third step is reconcile those concerns. And, you know, where this process can run aground is where I think what a lot of people are used to is instead of getting concerns on the table before they start thinking of solutions, what they do is they start thinking of solutions immediately. And those are competing solutions. And now we are in a power struggle. And now there's almost no way out because now we're trying to figure out whose solution is going to win and whose solution is going to lose. That's a win-lose proposition. But when we are trying to make sure that we understand and address each other's concerns, That's a win-win proposition. Winning means both parties' concerns got addressed. There doesn't have to be a winner and a loser, but this can't be about competing solutions, and there is no such thing as competing concerns. Both parties have legitimate concerns. They need to be heard. They need to be addressed.
Are the solutions then arrived at through this process going to be somewhat smaller than the unilaterally imposed kind, the Plan A kind, the authoritarian kind?
Well, the reaction is certainly going to be smaller. The truth is there is no reaction because both parties are agreeing that this is a solution that they're both good with and willing to run with. So if you mean by reaction is smaller, there is no reaction. But if you mean a different definition of smaller, I'd need you to tell me what you
okay.
What
the idea being that you know, if I come into the collaborative process thinking here's what I want, you know, and then end up taking a little bit less than that. Now, you know, I know you said this isn't compromising, but still, since everybody's agreeing on the solution, is the solution going to be perhaps a smaller step for either one?
I see. Well, it's interesting because what the two parties learn is that you don't really come into the process with a solution. You come into the process with concerns. And so if you have a solution that you've already decided on before the concerns of both parties have been heard, that's a premature solution. And you really can't come up with solutions until you've heard the concerns of both parties. So, for example, if you're going into this solving problems collaboratively process, let's say the unsolved problem is difficulty putting iPhone away to go to sleep at 11 p.m. And let's say you're going into that with the solution as a parent, I'm taking the iPhone away at 11 p.m., right? You know, that's a solution. What we really want to hear, and there's no middle ground on that solution, right? I suppose you could negotiate it into like quarter to 11 or 11:15, but the adult is actually imposing a solution in that instance. When we're hearing the kids' concerns, when we're hearing the adult's concerns, and when we're putting our heads together to come up with a solution, generally speaking, it bears no resemblance whatsoever to the solution that we might have gone into the process already thinking is where the ship was going to dock or the plane was going to land. We're always telling people you can't know where the plane is landing before it takes off. So it's actually not sort of chipping away at an original solution. It's coming up with a solution that addresses the concerns of both parties, and that's a different process.
Ross Green, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is a child psychologist and author of several books. His latest one is called Raising Human Beings, Creating a Collaborative Partnership with Your Child. You can join our discussion on the Exchange. We'll take about 10 more minutes with it. 800-838-3760 by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. I know a few eyebrows are going to go up with your statement. Good parenting means being responsive to the hand you've been dealt. And you've already said that kids pop out as who they are, and you by specific words, you say they're not lumps of clay to be molded by us.
All true. Kids have temperaments. Kids have personalities the minute they come into this world. And, you know, being responsive to the hand you've been dealt mostly means that this isn't a lump of clay to be molded into the shape that a parent originally envisioned. A lot of the parent-child conflict that I help people deal with has to do with parents having expectations that are a poor fit for the hand that they've been dealt. If you've been blessed with a kid who's diagnosed with ADHD, you're on a different playing field. If you have a kid who is irritable, cranky, grouchy, grumpy, you're on a different playing field. But if your expectations are just out of whack, you don't have to have a diagnosis to be on a different playing field. You just have to have expectations that are out of whack with who your kid is. So the most important part of parenting is to get a handle on the hand that you've been dealt, be responsive to it, so that this kid benefits from your wisdom, experience, and values. I find that a lot of parents are trying to ram that stuff down the kid's throat, irrespective of who the kid is. And I got to tell you, there's the recipe for the vast majority of the conflict that I see.
How much looser a tether, then, is this than a lot of parents expect to have with their kids?
Well, it's interesting. Truth is a tight tether often means that you're holding this kid really close to make sure that he doesn't get out of line. Here's what's interesting. I find that when we start solving problems collaboratively with kids very early on, you don't even need a tether. The kid is actually meeting most of your expectations. So there's really no tether. It's what expectations do we have for this kid? What expectations is he having difficulty meeting? And by what process do we go about trying to help him meet the ones that he's having difficulty meeting? And in the process of doing that, learn a lot more about who this kid is, what he can do, what his personality is, what his preferences are. He learns a lot more about us and what we want from him. And that whole collaborative process where we're coming together, boy, does that enhance communication. Boy, does that enhance relationships. You don't need a tether when you're solving problems collaboratively with your kid.
All right, so there's a lot in here about incompatibility, and this is not incompatibility between parent and child, but child and what?
Well, it can be incompatibility between parent and child, but the two crucial ingredients here are the expectations the parent has for their kid and the skills the kid has to meet those expectations. When the kid has the skills to meet our expectations, there is compatibility. When the kid doesn't have the skills to meet the expectations, either because the kid is lacking those skills or because the expectations are out of whack, there is incompatibility. And incompatibility is what often causes conflict, especially when parents move into simply insisting that their expectations get met. But we improve compatibility when parents are willing to find out what's getting in the kid's way, let the kid know what their concerns are about that expectation, put our heads together, and solve that problem together. That's compatibility.
What if a parent feels like the expectations they've been setting are not being met, not because of any particular interference or inability on the child's part, but unwillingness? I mean, where do you go then?
It's an interesting divide in the road, and it's a divide that's been around for quite a long time. For a very long time, we've been thinking that kids do well if they wanna, and that if a kid isn't doing well, it must be because he doesn't wanna do well. But what a lot of the research that has come out has been telling us is that what we should have been thinking all along is that kids do well if they can, that doing well is preferable, that if this kid could do well, he would do well, and that if he's not doing well, something must be getting in his way. So the first thing we have to do as parents is change our lenses. We've got to move away from kids do well if they wanna, which has been very popular for a very long time and still is too popular in too many places, and often, by the way, simply leads us to interventions that are aimed at making a kid wanna, and that's carrots and sticks. I find that carrots and sticks are actually fairly limited in what they help us accomplish with a kid, popular though they might be. I find that we're a whole lot better off figuring out along with the kid what's getting in his way, letting him know our concerns, and coming to solutions together that work for both of us, whole lot better.
So, and how open are you about the process with the child then? And I want to point out, by the way, since you used he, that you do alternate chapters of he and she. You're very fair in the book.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So if a parent is thinking, well, okay, so I'm not getting the stuff that I want from the child is not getting the stuff they want from me, focusing on incompatibility, how do you go deeper than just focusing on the behavior that the incompatibility produces?
Well, that's the whole point, is that the behavior is just the byproduct. The behavior, which, by the way, is what a lot of people focus on, the behavior is just the signal, the fever. The behavior is what's communicating to us that there is incompatibility, that there is an expectation the kid is having difficulty meeting. And that's whether the kid is pouting or sulking or screaming or swearing. Behavior just tells us we got a problem to solve. If all we're focused on is the behavior, you need to stop screaming. You need to stop swearing. Just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get it done. Boy, do we miss a lot of information, and boy, do a lot of problems go unsolved that way. And boy, do a lot of kids feel misunderstood and not listened to that way. And I find that that just contributes to a lot of frustration on the part of both parties and a lot of conflict.
The part you were just talking about, though, with the Iwanas, is this in the whole general realm of what's been referred to as attachment parenting?
I'm not sure that attachment parenting and what I talk about do overlap, just in terms of being responsive mm-hmm. to who the kid is and what the kid needs from us and what the concerns are. So there's a fair amount of overlap, and I also think that the attachment parenting folks are also among those who are saying shooting for control is really not what we should be aiming for. What we're really shooting for is influence.
All right. So as a friend told me once, they no longer want me as a director. They want me as a consultant. That's what you're talking about here. Ross Green, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a child psychologist. He has written the book Raising Human Beings, Creating a Collaborative Partnership with Your Child. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Take care.